I have quoted Ibn Fadlan's Odyssey at some length, not so much because of the scant information he provides about the Khazars themselves, but because of the light it throws on the world which surrounded them, the stark barbarity of the people amidst whom they lived, reflecting their own past prior to the conversion. For by the time of Ibn Fadlan's visit to the Bulgars, Khazaria was a surprisingly modern country compared to its neighbors. The contrast is evidenced by the reports of other Arab historians, and is present on every level, from housing to the administration of justice. The Bulgars still live exclusively in tents, including the king, although the royal tent is very large, holding 1,000 people or more. On the other hand, the Khazar Khan inhabits a castle built of burnt brick. His ladies are said to inhabit palaces with roofs of teak. And the Muslims have several mosques, among them one whose minaret rises above the royal castle. In the fertile regions, their farms and cultivated areas stretched out continuously over 60 or 70 miles. They also had extensive vineyards. Thus, Ibn Hokal says, quote, "In Khazaria, there is a certain city called Azmid, Semender, which has so many orchards and gardens that from Darbend to Sarir, the whole country is covered with gardens and plantations belonging to this city. It is said that there are about 40,000 of them. Many of these produce grapes." End quote. The region north of the Caucasus was extremely fertile. In AD 968, Ibn Hokal met a man who had visited it after a Russian raid. Quote, "He said there is not a pittance left for the poor in any vineyard or garden, not a leaf on the bough. But owing to the excellence of their land and the abundance of its produce, it will not take 3 years until it becomes again what it was." End quote. Caucasian wine is still a delight, consumed in vast quantities in the Soviet Union. However, the royal treasury's main source of income was foreign trade. The sheer volume of the trading caravans plying their way between Central Asia and the Volga-Ural region is indicated by Ibn Fadlan. We remember that the caravan his mission joined at Jurgenj consisted of 5,000 men and 3,000 pack animals. Making due allowance for exaggeration, it must still have been a mighty caravan, and we do not know how many of these were at any time on the move, nor what goods they transported, although textiles, dried fruit, honey, wax, and spices seemed to have played an important part. A second major trade route led across the Caucasus to Armenia, Georgia, Persia, and Byzantium. A third consisted of the increasing traffic of Rus merchant fleets down the Volga to the eastern shores of the Khazar Sea, carrying mainly precious furs much in demand among the Muslim aristocracy, and slaves from the north, sold at the slave market of Itil. On all these transit goods, including the slaves, the Khazar ruler levied a tax, often percent. Adding to this the tribute paid by Bulgars, Magyars, Bertas, and so on, one realizes that Khazaria was a prosperous country, but also that its prosperity depended to a large extent on its military power and the prestige it conveyed on its tax collectors and customs officials. Apart from the fertile regions of the south, with their vineyards and orchards, the country was poor in natural resources. One Arab historian, Istakri, says that the only native product they exported was isinglass. This, again, is certainly an exaggeration, yet the fact remains that their main commercial activity seems to have consisted in re-exporting goods brought in from abroad. Among these goods, honey and candle wax particularly caught the Arab chronicler's imagination. Thus, Mukhadashi says, "In Khazaria, sheep, honey, and Jews exist in large quantities." It is true that one source, the Darbend Nama, mentions gold or silver mines in Khazar territory, but their location has not been ascertained. On the other hand, several of the sources mention Khazar merchandise seen in Baghdad, and the presence of Khazar merchants in Constantinople, Alexandria, and as far afield as Samarra and Fergana. Thus, Khazaria was by no means isolated from the civilized world. Compared to its tribal neighbors in the north, it was a cosmopolitan country, open to all sorts of cultural and religious influences, yet jealously defending its independence against the two ecclesiastical world powers. We shall see that this attitude prepared the ground for the coup de théâtre, or coup d'état, which established Judaism as the state religion. The arts and crafts seem to have flourished, including haute couture. When the future emperor Constantine V married the Khazar Khan's daughter, she brought with her dowry a splendid dress which so impressed the Byzantine court that it was adopted as a male ceremonial robe. They called it tzitzakion, derived from the Khazar Turkish pet name of the princess, which was Chichak, or flower, until she was baptized Irini. Here, Toynbee comments, we have an illuminating fragment of cultural history. When another Khazar princess married the Muslim governor of Armenia, her cavalcade contained, apart from attendants and slaves, 10 tents mounted on wheels, made of the finest silk, with gold and silver-plated doors, the floors covered with sable furs. 20 others carried the gold and silver vessels and other treasures which were her dowry. The Khan himself traveled in a mobile tent even more luxuriously equipped, carrying on its top a pomegranate of gold.